Save big money right now at Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Kit of Home Safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kit of products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Former First Lady Michelle Obama finally talks about why she decided not to attend President Trump's inauguration. And her explanation really didn't have anything to do with politics. It's perfect for our Anything But Politics weekly segment. I'm Jenna, and this is Smarter News. Well, I have to admit, sometimes it's hard to pull yourself back from the rapid-fire news cycle that we're currently in. As I was preparing for this segment today, our segment where we take a look at some of the news stories that sort of fall to the wayside because we got a lot of important things to cover during the week, I found myself kind of getting drawn back to those harder news stories. You know, a serial killer potentially in New England, what's going on with tariffs and the White House and the stock market and what's happening between Russia and Ukraine. These are all really important stories. But we all need a breath at the end of the week, and we need to pull ourselves back from this news cycle to be able to see clearly and really understand when we see major developments in news stories, what's going on and why that they matter. So this is one of the reasons why we want to do this segment in a time when everything feels so much about politics. Let's just take a moment to talk about the interesting stories that have nothing to do with politics. And that's why we have the segment that we're doing today. What I did is pulled a few articles that I thought were really interesting from this week that didn't really fit anywhere particular in the news cycle, but might give you something to talk about or something to think about as you go into this weekend. So the first one is from the Wall Street Journal, and basically it's tackling a very important question. Are you a normal tipper? Are you a good tipper? Are you a better than average or a worse than average tipper? So the Wall Street Journal had an interactive quiz. Don't worry, I'll put it in the show notes for you, that allowed you to make a decision on a few different scenarios about how you would tip. Turns out, I hate to just, you know, release this information. Turns out I'm a normal tipper. Not exceptionally great, but not a bad tipper. I'm right in the middle, as one should be, as a journalist should be, right in the middle. I'm a nonpartisan tipper. I'm keeping the balance. But it was interesting to go through a couple of these scenarios and think, well, where is tipping appropriate and where maybe is it not appropriate? This is the headline of the article. Tipping is everywhere and consumers are fed up. Hear how some are coping. Diners are rejecting digital prompts, using cash, and eating more at home. Tipping quandaries are causing discomfort at checkout counters, sparking fights between spouses, and selling the enjoyment of eating out. The Wall Street Journal did their own survey and found of 1,000 respondents, they led to this conclusion that Americans are actually tipping less, which surprised me because it seems like everywhere I go, no matter what I'm doing, what I'm buying, you get that screen asking if you'd like to tip. And one of the things that this article talks about is this question about whether or not we're at a stage where service charges should just be included, that we shouldn't have to worry about tipping. It should be more like Europe, like the sophisticated Europeans do, that you just don't have to worry about tipping. All us Americans, we just want to throw money around. In Europe, they don't necessarily do that. They're just, it's just part of the check. There's a service fee already there. And servers, for example, know what they're essentially going to get paid. There was a person interviewed in the Wall Street Journal article that talked about what is relatively new in the United States. And in part, the Wall Street Journal says to rising costs for running an establishment like a restaurant. We keep going back to that example, that there are new fees and surcharges in your bill that typically would not have been there in the past. And then you're tipping on top of that. So let's say you have a meal that's $100, but the bill that you get is for $110 because there's extra fees that are compensating for paying people more or the higher costs of food or something like that. So one of the people that the Wall Street Journal interviewed, Andy Rawlings, a 54-year-old executive from Dallas, finds it sort of infuriating. And what he does to the chagrin of his wife is he looks at the bill and he subtracts those extra charges and then does a 20% tip or whatever a tip on the actual service or actual food. So he takes out those surcharges to do this. Apparently, this causes some discomfort with his wife, who calls it awkward. But it's one of the ways that he starts to handle it. So one of the takeaways from this article is to check out any potential surcharges that could be on your bill when you're out to eat that weren't there before. And again, this question of, Should we actually just have a service charge and call it a day? This next article is from the Washington Post. Why taking a vacation is good for you. Data shows that getting away can boost your health, happiness, and love life. Okay, we're all listening. They actually took a scientific approach to this. A 2025 review of 32 previous studies in the Journal of Applied Psychology also found that the immediate effects on well-being are more profound and long-lasting than previously thought when you take a vacation. So it's not just the immediate benefit of that, but it's much more long-lasting than you think. It's not just the afterglow that lasts a week. According to science, the afterglow of a vacation may last 45 days. And so the Washington Post is presenting this, and I felt like they were speaking to me, to the people that think taking a vacation is more trouble than it's worth. They said, no, it's not. You got to take a vacation and you actually have to leave town, science shows. You can't just take a staycation. It doesn't have the same effect. Actually go somewhere. So what about, you know, adding some spark to your love life? What about connecting with a really good friend? I mean, let's just expand it to just relationships that you want to refresh and reconnect. Maybe it's a husband and wife. Maybe it's a great friend. Who knows? Okay, we're not here to judge. We're just here to consider what the science is telling us. According to a study by American and Dutch researchers, what was important for couples was that they were supposed to go and do something new. So going and laying on a beach somewhere and just sort of, you know, staring into the sunset isn't necessarily, according to their research, going to provide the opportunity for reconnection. Reconnection was about doing something new together. And it didn't have to be something extreme, like visiting the seven wonders of the world. It just had to be going somewhere different, walking in a new neighborhood, going to a new city and trying out a new coffee shop, you're stumbling into a museum, just doing something different than you normally do together and going someplace brand new. That's what refreshed the relationship. And that's what actually brought some of the benefits from vacation. So I thought that was a really interesting way of thinking about taking a trip. And also sort of spoke to me as someone who really loves cities, because in a city, you could feel like you travel to a different world even when you stay in the same city. So that's my little plug for going to an urban area, but that's just me. Clearly, I don't want to go sit on a beach. This is the argument that I'm going to give my husband someday. I'm going to say it's science. Here's the Washington Post article. This actually ties in with the vacation article that also talked about vacation paying into sleep debt. So I know that there's been some controversy in the past of whether or not you can catch up on sleep, but apparently catching up on sleep debt is a real thing. And when you go away, according to the research, you can do that. There's this ability to actually get more rest and try to catch up a little bit. And this ties into the next article I thought was really interesting from The Atlantic. Why am I so tired is the headline. Why am I so tired? The specific exhaustion of being a mother. This is a little preview for Mother's Day, a little plug for Mother's Day. This journalist took a very interesting approach to this because the science is showing that mothers actually get the appropriate hours of sleep. I know, surprising to some mothers, especially with those with young children. The problem is the quality of the sleep isn't that great. And women seem more attuned to a child waking up in the middle of the night or some sort of disruption related to their children. So even though they may get a certain period of time, it's not particularly restful sleep. But it goes on to explain, okay, well, even with that, even if your sleep's not perfect, you're still getting it. So why do some moms walk around just feeling exhausted and drained all the time? Here's some of the other statistics that were included in this article. According to one recent study, women shoulder 73% of all cognitive household labor and 64% of the physical labor. Okay, I'm listening. All of this means, according to the writer, that I, like many working mothers, have very few opportunities to wind down. Listen to this fact. Employed women get only about 13 minutes for relaxing and thinking on an average weekday, according to the American Time Use Survey. Employed men get 25. So nearly double, still not a lot, by the way, to kind of think and daydream. They say relaxing and thinking. And I'm wondering, when's the last time relaxed and think was part of the day? I don't know. But apparently we don't do any of it. And apparently I'm not alone. This was just looking, though, at employed women and employed men, not necessarily employed mothers or employed fathers. So this idea of not having the ability to daydream and that impacting your level of energy is one that this article is trying to make. There was a person that was being interviewed. Her name is Maya Cash Carpenter. She's a mom of three. She hosts a podcast. She takes care of an ailing parent. And she said this, "I'm quite literally a human browser with 47 tabs open all times." She said that her husband is tired in a just finished a workout way, while she's tired in a my soul needs to be wrung out like a sponge way. This really spoke to me, except the article lost me at the end. Okay. So this was the advice. And this was the advice apparently of one of the experts interviewed in the article, that if you're a tired mom, take 5 or 10 minutes every day to do a mindless task. Fold some laundry. I was like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. And then there was said to go for a walk. All right, fine. That's better. But fold some laundry. I was like, wait, okay. So take some time, do a little daydreaming. Apparently that's going to help us all out. I think everyone should daydream. The article was not anti-male, by the way. It was just this question, which is, why is the fatigue so thick and so tough to work through? This actually also leads us nicely into some news from former First Lady Michelle Obama. So as you might remember, back in January, there was quite the controversy about Michelle Obama not attending the inauguration for President Trump. There's nothing that requires former presidents and their wife to attend an inauguration, but it's tradition. And some viewed it as etiquette. And so there was a real question as to what was going on. Was there something happening amiss in the relationship between President Obama and former First Lady Michelle Obama? Was she making this strong political statement at the time? Like, what was this all about? Well, she, Michelle Obama and her brother, Craig, are now hosting a podcast. Michelle Obama volunteers why she did not want to go to the inauguration. And I want you to listen to what she had to say, because she doesn't mention President Trump at all. This is going into, or leading into this conversation, was some talk about basically personal boundaries and being better about saying no to things that you don't really want to do. So take a listen to First Lady Obama.
People couldn't believe that I was saying no for any other reason, that they had to assume that my marriage was falling apart.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. while I'm here really trying to own my life and intentionally practice making the choice that was right for me, and it took everything in my power to not do the thing that was right, or that was perceived as right, but do the thing that was right for me.
On the one hand, I totally understand what she's talking about, especially given her trajectory in life, where she found herself in public service and for 8 years was really in this role that was about serving others. One can understand that when you have the option, if it's not something that you really want to do, feeling empowered to say no must be really important. And what a role that's very hard for us to relate to understand the pressure and the responsibilities of the first family. It's a very unique role in American history. So one can really understand her explanation about that. On the other hand, just as playing devil's advocate, there is that question about etiquette. And inaugurations only happen every so often. It is a sign of American democracy to see a peaceful transfer of power. And is there an argument that in this particular very unique situation, it's really not about personal choice here? It is still about serving the country. And in this situation, unlike a dinner or an event or a charity project or a friendship, you have to show up. You have to think about the bigger picture. Is there an argument for that? But one of the things that Michelle was talking about, and I say Michelle like we're friends, I keep saying First Lady Michelle Obama because there's only so many First Ladies. I believe they deserve the title. So what First Lady Michelle was talking about is she wanted to make sure that she's really starting to model good behavior for her daughters who are in their early 20s. And so then I found myself sort of coming full circle where I thought to myself, well, if we all learn this younger about feeling more empowered to say no when we want to say no and yes when we want to say yes, and making better decisions about boundaries, personal boundaries, professional boundaries, then maybe when you get to the end of, let's say, 8 years of service in a certain role, and you're in a quote-unquote more retirement phase, then you have more energy to do something when it's required of you, like come to an inauguration. So if you're better about it earlier in your life, maybe later in your life, then the decisions aren't so stark. And so I'm very curious what you think about this. Do you think she made the right decision? Again, when she gave the explanation, she didn't mention President Trump. One can surmise from the earlier conversation that she just didn't feel comfortable with attending for a variety of different reasons, but she wasn't specific about that. She didn't say his name. She really made it about her and whether or not it was comfortable or important for her and whether or not it was something that she felt comfortable doing. Do you think she made the right decision? Do you think in this case, etiquette and tradition and country wins out? What do you think about the power of no and how hard it is to say and in what situations? I'm very curious what you think. I'm going to leave you with that. This is our segment, Anything But Politics. We have a lot of big news stories to return to early next week. I hope you stay with us for that. For more quick, concise, nonpartisan news, which we always say yes to, this is Smarter News. I'm Jenna. Have a great weekend.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.